Portland City Council will come back to order. We will proceed with consideration of time certain item number 868. Carla, can you please read the title for 868?
Authorize actions to support immigration reform and prevent illegal racial profiling.
Linda Meng, would you please come forward? I'm going to make a few introductory remarks, ask that Commissioner Fritz also make some introductory remarks, and then we'll hear from Linda Meng and take testimony. This resolution, which is co-sponsored by the members of the City Council that you see before you today, sends a strong message that we support those cities in Arizona that are fighting the unjust and ill-advised state law, SB 1070. I had an opportunity to talk to Tucson Mayor Walkup this weekend as part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and he wanted me to convey to the citizens of Portland his gratitude and appreciation for this particular approach to supporting cities within the state that are challenging the constitutionality of SB 1070. The SB 1070 is an ill-advised attempt to address immigration issues. It needlessly encourages the specter of racial profiling and increases the possibility of arbitrary arrest and prosecution. And I want to thank Mark Johnson, the former president of the Oregon Bar Association, who has agreed to be our volunteer attorney, who has national expertise in this area of the law, and his willingness to volunteer and work with our Office of the Attorney, which makes this, in terms of the cost to the City of Portland, de minimis. I also want to thank those that have been involved with us in putting this together that you're going to hear from today, including Jose Ibarra, Dan Steffi, that has been advocating as a member of the business community. I know that Andrea Meyer, who we're going to hear from the ACLU, and her organization has been strong in this, and Carmen Rubio from the Latino Network that you're going to hear from soon, along with Gail Castillo from the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, all of which have been great advocates on this issue and have helped us find a path forward that might be unique among American cities that have responded to this, but we think, as you will hear from our city attorney, Linda Meng, that this is actually one of the strongest ways a city, a local municipal government, can support the overturning of these unfair and unjust state laws in Arizona. So, Linda Meng, if you could talk a little bit there's another important provision of this resolution that falls under the category of Oregon should walk its own talk, and Commissioner Fritz was instrumental in putting this clause into the resolution. I'd like you to speak to that.
Thank you, Mayor. When we were looking at what the appropriate response to the Arizona law, and indeed we have been considering over the 17 months that I've been in office, how we help people of different cultural backgrounds and immigrants and refugees in our city of Portland. And having known that, for instance, the State of Black Oregon report published last year showed no progress in equalizing opportunities for African Americans in 17 years. We know that states that are our neighbors to the north and south, Washington and California, along with 15 other states, including Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, have laws that prohibit racial profiling of pedestrians and motorists. Oregon, along with 28 other states, has yet to put legislation on the books prohibiting racial profiling for both traffic stops and pedestrian stops. And we know that in Multnomah County, people of color are disproportionately stopped by police officers and disproportionately convicted and incarcerated. We have been working on the City Council to address that, and we want the state government to address that so that we put our own house in order at the same time that we ask our city attorney and our volunteer attorneys to look into the constitutionality of the Arizona law and clarify.
We, as may as is obvious once I start talking, I am an immigrant. I am from England, and yet from looking at me, you can't tell that. And so it seems incongruent to me that people whose skin color is different from the majority should have a disproportional impact in traffic and pedestrian stops than I do as also an immigrant. So that was why I asked that we would ask our government relations staff to look into changes that might be needed in state law, and also that we support federal legislation, making our immigration laws such that people could comply with them. They're so difficult. When I came here on a student visa, I came here on a working visa to work in a children's camp for the summer. I had to take the bus to Montreal to change my visa to get a student visa so that I could then go to nursing school. I had to go overnight out of the country. And when I married an American, but for the fact that at the time I was a registered nurse, I would have had to have left the country for 10 years before I would be allowed to come back in after falling in love with an American while here on another visa. That doesn't make any sense, and our federal immigration laws are tearing families apart. And we need to address that issue before we start looking at who do we exclude from the opportunities of a nation of immigrants. That's who we are. If you're not, the Native Americans were here before us, but after that, we are all immigrants or descendants of immigrants. And so we need to, I think, look at our federal laws and our state laws, as well as seeking to clarify what this Arizona law does and shouldn't do.
Well said. Ms. Meng, welcome. If you could talk a little bit about boycotts and state law.
Yes, Linda Meng, city attorney for the city of Portland. When you asked us to look at the question of boycotts, we have looked at state purchasing laws, and I've looked at some of the resolutions of other cities who adopted boycotts. What those boycotts generally say is that they will boycott the state of Arizona to the extent that they're allowed to do so under the law. And I think by and large, they're probably not allowed to do very much. I'm not familiar with all the other state laws. But in Oregon, our purchasing laws that cover goods and services and construction contracts and most of the things that we purchase do not allow us to boycott a particular state. They're designed to promote competition and set standards for who is allowed to bid and who is not. And I believe that if this council adopted a boycott provision that would be subject to state law, it would really be ineffective. And so that's why we recommended against doing that and have participated and have been working with and in touch with the other cities and counties around the country that are intervening as amicus to support the actions of the Arizona cities and counties that are challenging the law.
So when I first, and I think, I don't know what the experience was of my other colleagues on the city council, but when the law was first passed, I raised concerns about it and got a lot of emails, some in supportive of my position of expressing grave concerns about this law, but also a lot of people that were very critical of my position of being critical of this law. You can imagine what it's like to be a city council and mayor of a city in Arizona, city of Tucson and the city of Flagstaff, and just how much withering criticism and pushback they're getting. I want to thank you for helping us find a way to support those two cities and possibly other Arizona cities that from within the state are challenging this law. So thank you for your legal advice on this matter. So our first group of folks to come up will be Carmen Rubio, Jose Ibarra, and Dan Steffi. Welcome back to the City Council. We're glad you're here. Carmen, would you like to begin?
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. It's great to be back here today for this important resolution. Thank you. That's kind. So my name is Carmen Rubio, and I'm the Executive Director of Latino Network, and I'm here this morning to thank you for going on the record for taking these important steps along with many other cities in Arizona and across the country against SB 1070. As a nonprofit that serves the Latino community in Portland, we support your efforts to publicly work against unlawful racial profiling and other provisions required by this law. As a community member, I cannot stress how critically important it is in the wake of legislation such as this for communities of color, and particularly immigrant communities, to be reassured that their city leaders support social justice and civil rights and will take a stand to defend our constitutional rights, regardless of where one comes from or how one looks. Other community leaders have also publicly demonstrated their condemnation of this law. Tobias Wolf, a professor of law at U of P Law School and an LGBTQ activist, wrote something that vocalized all of our fear and sentiment about this. The purpose of this law, he said, the purpose of this law is not to get rid of all undocumented immigrants. The purpose of this law is to disempower all brown-skinned immigrants in Arizona, turning them into third-class group who must live in constant fear of government and are subject to arbitrary abuse and exploitation. Senate Bill 1070 represents the beginning of a slippery slope of fear, intolerance, and lashing out by those who will use the law to justify racist and unjust actions, as we've already seen occurring in that state and elsewhere. 10 other states are already seeking similar legislation, and by allowing this to go unchallenged, we risk similar follow-up legislation that would deny citizenship to children born in the U.S. to undocumented immigrants, such as what was proposed in 1968 to deny citizenship to children born to Chinese immigrants, or the law doing away with ethnic studies and precluding teachers with accents to teach English courses in public schools. These are blatant acts of discrimination. For me, the ability to study and understand Chicano and Latino history was transformational to my sense of identity, confidence, and place in this country as a second-generation Chicana whose grandparents were immigrants to this country. So my fear, what's next? We can't afford to let ignorance and fear prevail. My hope is that any efforts such as these will stop in Arizona. But if they don't, my other hope is that we can continue to count on you, our elected leaders, to continue to prevent and condemn legislation rooted in discrimination and disempowerment, and to stand up for social justice and civil rights for all of us. So thank you for taking these important steps today. And I only have one suggestion. If in the resolution language you could substitute the word alien with undocumented immigrant or immigrant without legal status.
That was always of concern to me, that I had to fill out tax reports as a temporary resident alien. It made me feel like I was from Mars.
Right.
And here I am paying my taxes. So in some ways, I think leaving that word in is shocking and needs to be, that's the term that the government uses.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with your concern.
And I also had that thought that maybe it was in there, but maybe some quotes would be good then to distinguish it from language coming from the city. So
Thank
something
you.
To distinguish.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Welcome, Jose.
Good morning, Major Adams, council members. My name is Jose Ibarra, and I'm the current chair for the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs and the United States Council on Latino Affairs. You know, first of all, I want to thank you for the leadership that you have provided in this very important issue, not only for Latinos in Oregon, but for Latinos throughout the United States. And I want to thank you also for joining the U.S. Conference of Mayors who adopted a resolution similar to the one that we are considering today. Communities throughout the state of Oregon, Latino communities, are looking up to Portland and, you know, to the leadership sitting at this table and see what actions, what message we're sending to Arizona, you know, in protection of civil rights. And Carmen has talked about all the different implications. So, again, I just want to thank you for the leadership the council is taking under your guard, and I want to say thank you very much. This is an issue that we're going to continue to look forward to your input and your leadership and your voice, and making sure the city of Portland has a voice and is heard throughout the United States.
And congratulations on your election in terms of your national post.
Thank you very much. And I also wanted to point the other 40 or so civil rights organizations, not only from the Latino community at the national level, have, you know, they are aware of the resolution that the city of Portland today is considering. So, you know, Portland is setting an example for many cities throughout the country. And I want to thank you again for that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Steffi, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Dan Steffi. Thank you for taking action against what I consider to be a dangerous and unjust law in Arizona. My wife and I are boycotting all things Arizona, and after hearing the legal wranglings, I'm thankful that I don't have the responsibility of representing all of the citizens of Portland, so I fully support the action you're taking today. I could talk about the legal and the moral and the sociological issues that this law raises, in my opinion, that are reprehensible. But I'd like to instead get out of my head and get into my heart, the things that constrict my heart about this law. As you know, I'm married to a fairly fantastic Latina, and actually a totally fantastic Latina.
We'll clean up the transcript on that and send her a copy.
Hopefully she's not watching right now.
She is a fantastic Latina.
My time with Maria has enabled me to see and understand things that I would never have had the insight and perhaps the courage to recognize before. I've seen her targeted by store detectives in a well-known department store in downtown Portland, simply because she's a Latina. I've witnessed her anxiety at going into an event with few people of color, recognizing that she may be subject to some hurtful comment during the course of the evening. And I've also watched her in places like New Mexico and Colorado, where she's not so much in the minority, relax when she goes into similar gatherings. And that experience has caused me to realize that what I think of as racism doesn't really count. We in the majority who are not of color and who someday, very soon, we'll change that distinction, are, in my opinion, not entitled to define the term. Those who are so entitled are those who, like the love of my life, have more than once been followed, questioned, ignored, dismissed, or not allowed to participate as fully qualified members of the community. I'm reasonably convinced that the overwhelming majority of those who share that common experience with her would see the Arizona law as racist and certain to result in profiling such as that Maria has experienced, and worse. So think about how the young Latino feels about a law that clearly singles out the people he knows and loves and trusts, and consider how he or she will struggle to hang on to their confidence when their mother or father or brother or sister are singled out and required to provide proof of their immigration status or their citizenship, frankly, because of the way they look or dress or simply talk. And as you vote on the ordinance today, let that guide the way you respond in the form of yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well said. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Very compelling testimony. Andrea Meyer and anyone else who signed up?
There's also Kathy Zentlin and Natalie Patrick Knox.
Thank you for being here today. We really appreciate it. Ms. Meyer.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon, here today in support of the resolution. ACLU, along with a coalition of civil rights groups, has filed the class action lawsuit on May 17th in the U.S. District Court of the District of Arizona, challenging the new law, and we are pleased to do that. As we know, this law invites racial profiling, interferes with the federal power and authority over immigration matters, in violation, we believe, of the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, as well as the First, Fourth, and 14th Amendments. As the ACLU stated when it filed the lawsuit, Arizona's law is quintessentially un-American. We are not show-me-your-papers country, nor one that believes in subjecting people to harassment, investigation, arrest, simply because others may perceive them as foreign. Several law enforcement groups, including the Arizona Association of Chiefs of Police, oppose the law because it diverts limited resources from law enforcement's primary responsibility, of providing protection and promoting public safety in the community. And it undermines trust and cooperation between local police and immigrant, indeed, all communities. I've provided you two papers today. One is a briefer, and I will discuss in a moment, on Oregon law, and the other is just some questions and answers about specifically about the Arizona law prepared by the affiliate there. So I want to emphasize the point about the public safety issue. Oregon made a policy decision many years ago that we are not a show-me-your-papers state by enacting ORS 181-850. That law prohibits state and local police from enforcing federal immigration laws if the person is not involved in criminal activity, at which point it does allow for engagement with ICE. ORS 181-850 provides important safeguards to all, and I want to emphasize all Oregonians, by ensuring that witnesses and victims of crime may report what they know without fear of government reprisal. I know in the past, and one of the important issues is safety in the community, domestic violence, sexual assault, and other victims of those crimes. It is critical that they feel safe to come forward to report when they are victims of crimes, and laws like occur in Arizona absolutely make that impossible and only increase moving domestic violence and sexual assault and other crimes underground. As now retired Hillsborough Chief of Police Ron Lewis stated a few years ago, public safety is necessary for everyone, regardless of immigration status. That's simply not our job or function. The more we marginalize undocumented people, the more they will become victims of crime themselves, and the more difficult it will be for our public safety to help them because of fear. The closer the police are to their respective communities, the more effective they will be for crime detection, crime prevention, and the more effective they will be for homeland security. So ACLU is pleased to be here today in support of the resolution. We encourage the changes that were mentioned by the previous witness, and we are also looking forward to working with your government relation folks in terms of enacting statutes in the Oregon legislature to prevent racial profiling in our community, in our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Natalie Patrick Knox with CAUSA, Oregon's Immigrants' Rights Coalition. And thank you very much for this forum here. And I'll keep my comments brief because actually I just want to follow on to what Andrea said, and she addressed a lot of the concerns that we have seen. CAUSA is a coalition of organizations, and we work in Portland here with partner community-based and grassroots organizations and throughout the state. And as we've been meeting with different organizations and communities trying to figure out the implications of this Arizona law and to understand how that affects us, we have heard numerous stories of fear. A fear of what is going on, fear of law enforcement, fear of communities being torn apart and families being torn apart. And it is so important that the city of Portland take this step with passage of this resolution to send a strong message, to alleviate some of that fear so that our communities can be safer. So thank you again for your efforts here and for taking this good step and moving in the right direction for our communities.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome to City Council.
Thank you. My name's Kathy Zoitlin. I didn't really come prepared to speak, but it's Andrea. Andrea encouraged me to just come and speak from my heart, and so I just wanted to say thank you. And I too speak as a spouse of an immigrant and feel the... From a very deep place that it is very important that the city do pass this resolution, and I'm very grateful for your efforts on that.
Well, thank you all very much for a very compelling testimony. Appreciate it. Anyone else wish to testify on this matter?
We have one more person who signed up, okay. Judith Parker.
Well, Ms. Parker's coming up. Shane, is the addition of quotations, is that a Scribner's, or do we have to actually do an amendment?
I'd say it's a Scrivener's error. If it's just quotations is all that's missing.
Unless there are objections, then we will add the quotations as requested.
Around alien, wherever alien is stated.
Correct.
That's what it says in the law. Thank you.
Yep. So we're clear that we're just quoting the law, not agreeing with the portrayal. Hi.
Hi. Judy Parker. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Hispanic Bar Association, and I'm also a commissioner of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. The OHBA supports this resolution. The OHBA believes that Arizona's law is likely an unconstitutional exercise of state power that will lead to racial profiling and other injustices. And the OHBA joins the Hispanic National Bar Association in calling for an economic boycott by entities that are able to do so. We understand that the city is bound by legal constructs that we're not able to, but we appreciate the opportunity to express our support of the city and what it's doing, as well as the inclusion of the quotation marks in the language. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your service on an important commission. Appreciate you being here today. All right, Carla, unless there's council discussion, would you please call the vote on resolution item number 868?
Fish?
I want to begin by thanking Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fritz for taking the lead on this important resolution and bringing forth what I consider to be an extremely important issue before this council. And I'm struck by the fact that this is a part of a series of actions taken by this council in the past year, which have had a consistent theme. And those include the renaming of 39th Avenue in honor of Cesar Chavez. And that includes the unanimous support of this council in support of the DREAM Act, which followed a film called Papers, which framed the issue of the children of undocumented people in this country who are at risk of being deported. And today we come to this issue. And in my judgment, this is a fundamental issue. At the heart of the issue before us is who decides the immigration policies of this country. Do the states and the legislative bodies of the states and the cities decide our national immigration policy, or is this the province of the federal government? Mayor, you and I both, I think, in our past had a chance to work for members of Congress, and no doubt in our work spent some time addressing immigration issues. And in the early 80s, when I worked in Washington, D.C. for Congressman Barney Frank, he and my father both served on the Judiciary Committee, and immigration reform was the topic of the day. And I'm struck by how far we have moved away from some of those early debates, because in the early 1980s, the big issue of our country faced was the Simpson-Mazzoli bill. And that was the first effort to create some kind of balance. And Simpson-Mazzoli was based on the notion that undocumented people in this country would have a path to full citizenship because we did not think it was healthy to have people living in the shadows. And at the same time, put some stronger measures in place to deter people, employers, from exploiting undocumented workers. What I remember from those days is that Republicans and Democrats shared a basic philosophy on the vitality and importance of immigration to our country. And 30 years later, heading into midterm elections, in a down economy, here we are once again talking about immigration, but now in an entirely negative cast. And while I understand that this issue is a hot topic on talk radio and is a good wedge issue in politics, I believe the principle that we are standing up for today is that constitutional questions should not be decided in plebiscites in our states, they should be decided in our courts. I liked what Carmen Rubio said, the head of the Latino Network, and she said she urged us to stand up for the civil rights of all people today. Now, she said all people. She didn't say Hispanic Americans or African Americans. She said all people, because we know that if one group is targeted, then we all diminished, and that if we allow the civil rights and constitutional protections of one group to be diminished, then it diminishes us all. And I believe someone named King once said that better than I could. So I believe that the resolution before us is an appropriate response to what has occurred in Arizona. And I'm struck by some of the emails we've received. People can speak to us by coming to council, emailing, calling, writing us. They all get equal weight. But I've seen at least three issues framed by people who have urged us not to take this action. The first is, essentially, it's none of our business. The question of the constitutional rights of fellow citizens of this republic is none of our business. Well, to that I would simply say, we are residents of the state of Oregon. We are citizens of the United States of America. And it is our business as citizens to be concerned about how constitutional protections are afforded to people throughout our country. That is fundamental to our rights and our obligation as a citizen of this country. The second thing that I've read is that there's been some polling on this done here and there, and that we should base our decisions about how constitutional protection should or should not be provided based on whatever the polling data. Well, I think the genius of our Constitution is that we put some things in the Constitution because we said that they were so fundamental that we did not want the momentary passions of the day to determine rights, that we wanted them enshrined in a document that ultimately the courts had the final say on. And the third theme in the emails that I've received are this process, like some other processes we've been involved with, has unleashed, if there's the better angels of people's nature, what's the opposite? This is the commentary we've received from people who have lumped Hispanics into one category, painted with one broad brush, and made very disparaging comments about people that they don't know. And that I regret, but it seems to be a recurring theme of every time that this issue or related issues come up. Today, in this resolution, what we are saying is that we have serious concerns that the constitutional rights of a class of citizens are being abridged. And as Andrea Meyer from the ACLU mentioned, they include the Equal Protection Clause, that we are all treated equally, the Due Process Clause, which ensures that before any actions are taken against us and deprivation of liberty, that we have our rights protected, and perhaps the most fundamental question of all, which she called the Supremacy Clause issue, which I think in plain English means, again, who sets the immigration policies of our federal of our country? Are they decided by the legislature in Arizona or by the Congress of the United States, mindful of what the constitutional dictates are? To me, those are compelling issues, and what this council is saying today, and I hope and I assume unanimously, is that we joined with people throughout the country who believe that this matter should be adjudicated in court and that a federal judge should decide this question, and perhaps the Supreme Court should decide this question. And I'm encouraged that our chief law enforcement officer, our chief federal law enforcement officer, happens to be the President of the United States, as I read the Constitution, has already stated publicly he believes there are significant constitutional defects with this law. So I believe we are on the right side of history, but what we are essentially saying is let the courts decide this question, and that in Oregon, since we do not believe in discrimination, we join with those who ask the courts to review this, in my judgment, dubious law. I'm proud to support this matter, and I would close by just noting that we can all tell, we all have stories of people we know who would be affected by this. Carmen Rubio was my public advocate once. She could be in business in traveling in Arizona for business and be affected by this and detained. Danielle Ledesma in my office, who has a rich mixture of Native American, Mexican, and Spanish heritage, could be affected by this if she's traveling in Arizona. And, you know, to me, perhaps the most personal is that my mother-in-law, Carmen Gomez, who came to this country, gave birth to her eldest daughter, Patricia, who is now my spouse and life partner, would be affected by this. And Carmen, after 30 years in this country, still speaks with a broken accent. Her English is she still struggles to find the right English word, although she is the Scrabble champion of our family. But she could be targeted under this law if she found herself in Arizona, and that is not the American way. So today we join together in saying that we believe this law is not constitutional, but I think we're taking a very prudent step in joining with other government entities who've asked the courts to decide this question. And I'm proud that once again the City Council has taken a leadership position on this. I thank again the mayor and Commissioner Fritz, and I'm proud to stand up today, as Carmen said, for the civil rights of all people in our country. Aye.
Leonard?
There are many, many wonderful attributes about the United States of America and its history. One of them is not being tolerant for people that look like us or talk like us. I have to briefly remind those listening that this is the latest in a series of organized attempts by not just some small groups of people. It would be actually somewhat reassuring if it was just small groups of people who expressed intolerance, which I'm sure is a consistent theme in countries throughout the world. The troubling part is that that discrimination is actually embraced by governmental institutions. And I think that's what sets us apart from the rest of the world and has for some over 400 years. I will remind people that upon arriving in this country, or this land, I would more accurately say, in the 17th century, a systematic policy of extermination was imposed upon Native Americans, which continued not just in the 17th century, but in the 18th century, in the 19th century, and well into the 20th century. Most people associate throughout the world Americans' racism with African Americans, which certainly began with the arrival of white English-speaking people in this land. But it really is just another example of discrimination. In the 19th century, with the wave of Irish immigrants into the United States, though they looked like a lot of people here, they talked different, and as such were relegated to the worst ghettos one can imagine, often starving to death, often not allowed to have jobs others had, and often were the object of violence from people born in this country. In the hysteria that occurred in the United States after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, probably even most shockingly for modern America, it was not only widely supported but embraced by institutions of the government to round up people not that were born in Japan and immigrated here, not just them, but people that were born here. Japanese Americans were born on this soil, rounded up, lost their businesses, their homes, and put in concentration camps. There's no other way to put it, throughout the United States. And lest my colleagues find some solace in this issue being decided by the courts, I need to remind everybody here that it was the United States Supreme Court in the Dred Scott decision of March 1857 that ruled on a 7-2 vote that African Americans indeed could never qualify to be American citizens, and in fact, in census counts, only counted as 3/5 of a person. And I think history commands that we recognize the two brave men of that 9-member court that dissented, and dissented vigorously, Associate Justice John McLean and Associate Justice Benjamin Curtis. So we arrive at this place in time where Arizona adopts a law that nobody can argue becomes a tool to arrest those and detain those who look different or who talk different. And I would just close with reminding people of the plaque that is affixed to the Statue of Liberty, which oftentimes is abbreviated by folks, and understandably so, and the most popular portion of the sonnet that is affixed to the Statue of Liberty that was written by the poet Emma Lazarus is, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free." Most people think that's the entirety of the quote. It's not. The entire poem goes like this. "Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lighting, and her name Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp," cries she with silent lips. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Aye.
Fritz.
Martin Luther King spoke of the day when his four little children would one day live in a nation where they would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. This law asks law enforcement officers to judge people by the color of their skin. Immigrants are legal aliens are already legal aliens. See, I'm still using the text that it's deeply in my lexicon because having lived here as a temporary resident alien for several years, I know that's what the government refers to immigrants as. And I was required to carry my papers at all times as a temporary legal resident alien. As an American citizen, I am not required to carry my papers at all times. And I don't want any American citizen to have to carry their papers at all times because of the color of their skin or the way they talk. My accent is considered charming by folks sometimes. Others' accents are not. And that's something that we have to recognize in our society. I recognize, too, that there are a lot of folks in Portland who don't support what the council is doing today in asking the courts to make this decision and in asking our government relations staff to make clear our determination that racial profiling in Oregon is wrong. I've received a dozen or so, maybe more, emails from folks who strongly support what Arizona has done, and I recognize that Arizona is dealing with some different issues or attempting to deal with different issues through their law. One of the email correspondents asked me if I had read the Arizona law, and I have. It's 17 pages. Notwithstanding any other law, a peace officer may lawfully stop any person who is operating a motor vehicle if the officer has reasonable suspicion to believe the person is in violation of any civil traffic law and this section, which is referring to legality of immigration. But listen to this part. It is unlawful to conceal, harbor, shield, or attempt to conceal, harbor, or shield an alien from detection in any place in this state, including any building or any means of transportation, if the person knows or recklessly disregards the fact that the alien has come to and has entered or remains in the United States in violation of the law. When I read that, I thought of the brave souls who harbored slaves escaping from the South to the North, and I thought of Anne Frank and the people who looked after her. And I thought of, what if I was not here legally and my husband was then subject to that law because we wanted to be together? This is what this law is talking about. This addresses the fundamental issues of who we are as Americans and who we want to be as Americans and where we've come from as Americans in this nation of immigrants. And so I'm very pleased to support this serious addressing of the issues that have been raised by the Arizona law. I recognize that some people would have liked us to have done a boycott. And as the mayor said, there are cities in Arizona who are bravely standing up to the law, and we don't want to include them in that. And we trust the people of Portland to make their decisions about whether they want to vacation in Arizona under these circumstances. So I'm guided by Marie-Lisa Johnson, the director of the Office of Human Relations, who's here, and the Human Rights Commission has spoken out on this issue. Mayor Adams, thank you for your leadership. City Attorney Linda Meng has done a wonderful job of helping us propose something which is meaningful, and Government Relations Interim Director Martha Pellegrino, I know, will help us at the state legislature. We are serious about equal rights in Portland, in Oregon, in the United States. Aye.
Adams.
Well, the City Council, I think today has far better summarized and spoken to all the issues, along with those that have testified, that I ever could. But I hope that the actions, and I don't, unfortunately, in the scheme of things, very few people will see all of that compelling testimony, but I hope that the action that we're taking here today ripples across the nation. This weekend, U.S. Conference of Mayors did pass a resolution that is very similar to this. And so to those cities involved with the consideration of that resolution, to those cities that have offered a boycott resolution, and to all the cities that have yet to act on this across the nation, I encourage you to follow this example. And I want to issue today a friendly and good-natured but very serious challenge to cities across this nation to follow our lead and to support the legal efforts of Tucson and Flagstaff and other cities who are in this state to support their legal efforts to overturn this law. It is unfair and, I believe, unconstitutional. And I would encourage Portlanders to do everything they can to support the cities of Tucson and Flagstaff separate from the actions of Arizona state government. And again, I just want to end on the pushback that we've gotten here in Oregon, you know, pales in comparison to the pushback that the city councils and the mayors of Tucson and Flagstaff are receiving on this issue in Arizona. And I would encourage everyone to do everything they can to support those two cities. Aye. Thank you all very much. Can you please read the title? Sorry, we're late, Chair. Please read the title for resolution item number 901.
Approve a memorandum of understanding with Multnomah County regarding funding for the Mental Health Crisis Assessment and Treatment Center.
This memorandum of understanding memorializes the agreement between the city and county for the operation, construction, and operation of the CATC. This investment is very high priority for our city council and our partners in Multnomah County. Originally, the investment was targeted for fiscal year 2012-2013. However, recent events and the absolute host-scale disinvestment in programs funded by the state but administered by the county and our desire to ramp up getting this program online means that we have moved this forward. This added the urgency to the timing of the renovating the Hooper facility and adding this important additional service for crisis and assessment. Last week, the City Council authorized an increase in the line of credit short-term debt issued PDC's Central East Side Urban Renewal Area by $2 million in order to accelerate the renovation of Hooper Detox Center to include a 16-bed Crisis Assessment and Treatment Center, CATC. By taking this action, construction will begin this summer, and the facility can open in 2011. We will create a new community service and put construction crews back to work on this almost $6 million renovation. This has truly been a collaboration between multiple stakeholders, and I'd like to have Warren Jimenez, Deputy Chief of Staff, to discuss a few more specifics, and then we will hear from the Chair and Joanne.
Great. Well, first of all, just want to acknowledge our partners who have been in this, who have been taking the lead in providing the center, and it's been a truly unique partnership. But would like to do is just go into some of the detail of the treatment center, and Joanne, I'm glad you're here because I might not get this all right, but we'll go over some of the specifics. The Crisis Assessment and Treatment Center will serve individuals experiencing mental health crisis who cannot manage their symptoms on their own and do not need a hospital stay to become stable. This center, as the mayor mentioned, is a 16-bed secure locked facility in which people will stay from a range of 4 to 14 days as their mental health symptoms stabilize. Upon discharge, each person will have a plan for follow-up treatment in the community, which includes some wraparound services such as housing, some other basic needs assistance, and care for their physical health needs. The center will also be designed as inviting and safe and in supportive environment for recovery from crisis. The staff will include peers who provide that support and advocacy and mentoring at the center. As the mayor mentioned, it will be located in the Hooper Detox Sobering Center. The Multnomah County 24-hour, 7-day-a-week mental health call center will manage the admission to the center. The staff will work with police and local hospitals to help triage those individuals who are most clinically appropriate to be placed as part of this continuum. The police will be engaged and will be contacted by the health centers and can also use the call center, a dedicated line, if they encounter someone who appears to be in crisis due to symptoms of mental illness. They may also contact Project Respond, mobile crisis outreach, and they will manage admissions at that time. The center, the crisis center, is scheduled to open in the summer of 2011. And with that, I'll turn over with the chair and Joanne to talk about a little bit more about this.
Welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm Jeff Kogan, Multnomah County Chair. And I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for considering this memorandum of understanding, which would create a really important partnership. And I want to talk about two things. One is the nature of the partnership and why that's important, and then a little bit about the nature of the services. And in terms of the partnership, it's important to know that this is the city and the county taking the lead, but also working very closely with the state, which is a financial partner in this, as well as with nonprofit community in making this happen. And I believe deeply that these kinds of cross-jurisdictional partnerships and public-private partnerships are going to be increasingly important to all of us as we try to meet the needs of our community in very constrained times. As Mayor Adams noted, the state's cuts are affecting us all. They're beginning to be coming down further and further. And we all know that the financial condition of the federal government as well is going to probably prevent additional significant stimulus from them. And what that means is, to a certain extent, we're on our own. And we need to figure this out collectively, because the needs of the community are great. And the members of the community, they don't really care if they're getting helped by the city or the county or metro or the state. They just know that they have needs and they want them met. And I've been truly heartened by the partnership in the months that I've been in this role in trying to make this happen. As Mayor Adams noted, originally we were thinking this was going to happen later. There's a number of reasons that it made sense to move it forward. And the working relationship that my office has established with Mayor Adams' office, Warren Jimenez has been a terrific, terrific partner on this, has been wonderful. We really needed, for a variety of reasons, including the availability of new market tax credits that are available for a limited time window, to get this done quickly, and we did. And I'm hoping we did, assuming that you vote in favor today and my board votes in favor tomorrow, then we did. And I think it's an important model for us, and this is a really important project. Warren told you the specifics of the operations. The broader context is important, too. How people with mental illnesses are treated by law enforcement, by politicians, by the community, has been at the forefront of many of our conversations over the past months, as well as being at the forefront of a lot of headlines. Frankly, we know that there have been weaknesses. We have a system, but we know there are gaps. And collectively identifying those gaps, this particular program, having a place for people in crisis to become stabilized, has been identified as an absolutely top priority. We know that this is not going to mean suddenly everything's okay. We're not going to suddenly have the perfect mental health system. But what we are going to be doing by moving forward with this is identifying critical weak links in the system, partnering to fill them. And that's what this is about. And I'm really excited about the prospect. I'm really excited about the partnership. And I want to thank you for giving me a chance to come in and talk with you this morning.
Well, we couldn't have sped it up, and we couldn't have come to fruition on this as quickly as we have without the great partnership of you and your team and Chair Kogan. I have a feeling this is going to be the first of many fantastic and productive collaborations between our jurisdictions. So thank you for your great work.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm Joanne Fuller, and I'm the director of the county's Department of County Human Services. I don't have much to add to what you've heard. I'm here mostly to answer your questions if you have questions. I do want to acknowledge that Ed Blackburn is here today, who is the executive director of Central City Concern, and we could not be doing this project without Central City Concern's fantastic ability to step up and take on the remodel of this facility. In many communities, as they try to put together these kinds of facilities, they either have to build to suit or they have to, go and scrounge for something and make do with a half-decent facility. What we're going to be able to do with the plan that's before you today is to really rehab a facility that for many, many years the community has turned to when they've been in desperate need. And so it's got an identity. It's named after a person who died in distress in this community. It is a facility that the police are used to dropping people off at sobering, which will still be there on the first floor of the facility. So I think it creates a great opportunity for us to put this center someplace that people will really see as a refuge, because Hooper has been a refuge in our community for a long time. The other wonderful thing about this project is that the creation of this center at Hooper has allowed the detoxification services that were in the top floor of Hooper for many, many years in really substandard conditions to move to the Madrona, another project that was co-supported by the city, the county, and the state, to new, very effective facilities there where we can continue to provide detoxification services. So what we're really getting here is a coming together and a synergy between what we're doing with people who are in crisis around their substance abuse issues and what we're doing with people who are in crisis because of their mental health issues. Thank you.
Questions for discussion from council?
Just, Mayor, just a comment, if I could. I think it's important in times like this that we highlight the kind of investment that's required to produce results. We know we have a growing crisis, lots of people on the street, maybe as many as 2,000 people last night alone, and increasingly we're seeing people that have substance abuse issues, mental health issues. And we all wish we could be king or queen for a day and solve the problem, but I think it's really important that the public understand that once upon a time, the federal government was more involved in the solution. And once upon a time, the state government had more discretionary funds to be involved in the solution. And increasingly, it's falling to the local jurisdictions, the county and the city primarily, to address this crisis. And as the mayor has very eloquently pointed out many times recently, we're not just carrying the ball for people in our community. We really are carrying the ball for the whole metro region, because if you look at the dollars being invested in our sister jurisdictions, they are just, they pale in comparison to what the county and the city invest. And so this is a wonderful program, and there'll be 16 beds, but the public needs to understand it's going to cost $6 million to renovate the facility, and the ongoing costs annually, which we're going to share, is another over $1 million. And so that's great, but that's how we're going to address a small piece of the big problem. And so when people get frustrated and say, you know, how are we ultimately going to get to the finish line? This really is one of those areas where the answer is we need more resources, because we know how to address it. We have great outcomes, but ultimately it's a question of resources. And Mayor, this afternoon, Chair Kogan and I will be cutting the ribbon at the Martha Washington. Mm-hmm. And the city has put $4.7 million into that project, which, just to put it in context, we'll be investing $67 million in tax increment financing dollars over the next fiscal year in affordable housing. This one is $4.7 million. So we have a great working relationship. We're making these investments, but I just need, people need to understand that these sound like big dollars, but it's an enormous problem. And we are making steady progress, but the problem is still consuming us. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Anyone else wish to testify on this matter?
No one else signed up.
All right, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Very pleased to support this want to acknowledge the mayor, Commissioner Saltzman, our county partners. Since Joanne Fuller's here, I'd like to acknowledge that she has become a full partner of the new Portland Housing Bureau, thinking of ways that we can redefine the relationship at a time of scarcity to get a bigger bang for the taxpayer buck, and we really appreciate that. And it seems like Ed Blackburn shows up at every one of these things, because somehow he was at the Madrona opening for some reason. He's here today, and I understand he's going to be at the Central City Concern. The Martha Washington this afternoon. So Central City Concern really is our go-to nonprofit partner in dealing with folks that are struggling with addiction, and we're very pleased with these partnerships. Jeff, it's a pleasure to work with you at the county. And we're looking forward, as the mayor's indicated, to great things. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, as we have learned in the city and the county, investing in services like this not only help the people that need the help, it also has other positive effects, like lowering the crime rate and lowering interactions that are unhealthy with the police. It reminds me of the parable of people coming down a river drowning, and us going out to save them one at a time as opposed to going upriver and finding out why they're in the river in the first place. And this is an example of stopping people early on before they get into a deadly confrontation or before they lose all hope in life and giving them a chance to succeed. I would remind the council that crime in Old Town, China,